Welcome to Running for Real, a global community with a shared love and curiosity for running. Together, we reconnect with the reasons why we love to run and discover ways it helps us become better people. Whether it's the quiet moments of a morning run while the rest of the world still sleeps, or befriending the strangers next to you at the start line of a race, we are here to connect with others who see running as the common thread that weaves our lives together. Come join me, Tina Muir, as I talk with people from all walks of life, united by a love of running. Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 325 of the Running for Real podcast. Thank you for joining me. I'm excited that you are here and a little bit humbled by this episode today. I've got to be honest. So while this book was primarily about the friendship between my guests today, Christopher McDougall and Eric Orton, who have together teamed up to write Born to Run 2, The Ultimate Training Guide. And you will hear that Eric was actually the most critical piece of Born to Run. However, in this episode, you will hear that we kind of got a bit off track and I got very vulnerable and honest with how I have been feeling lately. Now, these two, their ears perked up, especially Eric, in that they were curious as to what they could change. And they called me out on something that I was saying. And it was hard to hear, I'll be honest. But I think I needed to hear it. And I think it will be good for you to see that maybe you see my running going well on social media. I recently won a race and in a course record, and that felt amazing. But it doesn't mean that under the surface, some confusing things might be going on. So I want you to take a listen of that. I also want to warn you that we got off on another tangent about shoes, and you will hear Chris kind of make light of the situation and be like, whoa, we got to lighten this thing up. This is fun episode. This has got very serious pieces in it. They both loved having this conversation. I did too. And I think you're going to enjoy it. So without any further ado, let's thank one of our sponsors and get right to this episode with Christopher McDougall and Eric Orton. Hi friends, quickly interrupting this episode to just talk to you a little bit about Patreon. I know I've been talking about Patreon a lot lately, and I gotta be honest, it really has humbled me in that I have been posting, I've been sharing, and I haven't really seen many people responding to a lot of the things, a lot of bonus materials that I am adding. And while I know those are valued, and many of you have said you really appreciate those extra things, I also wonder if maybe I was putting a bit too much pressure on you with these extra travel together runs, with these Zoom chats, with these extra blog posts, your suggestions for podcast guests, your questions you wanted to ask for weekly strides, a shout out on a together run. There are a lot of things that I am offering here that it suddenly dawned on me might just be overwhelming. Actually, it didn't dawn on me, I'll be honest. I had emails coming in from multiple people who are in Patreon who say, I love supporting you. I love that I give you the opportunity to continue what you do, but I just don't have the time or the bandwidth to enjoy all these additional bonus things. So I just want to remind you that there is a, what we call a keeping it real level, which is $3 per month. You don't get any bonuses that are going to overwhelm you and feel like you have to find time you don't have time for to make it worthwhile. You also don't have to do anything. It is just a way of supporting me and the Running for Real team for, I mean, that what's that, like half a coffee these days? I think a coffee is like $5 in most places. But if you want to just go to patreon.com/runningforreal, that's the number for runningforreal.com. That's patreon.com/runningforreal. It's also in the show notes. You can just support Running for Real at the Keeping It Real level or the Together Team level, which just gives you those travel together runs. Now that is a way, a massive way that you can help me and support me. And if you pay annually, there's a big discount there. I just want to remind you that it doesn't, I maybe have been pushing all these bonuses and talking about all these extra things you get, but if it works better for you just to chip in a little bit to help me support all the work that I'm doing, that means a lot too. You don't have to go up to the top level. So just wanted to be real with you for a minute here and say thank you to those of you who are supporters on Patreon. It means so much. Thank you, friends, and let's get back to the episode. Chris, welcome and welcome back to the Running For Real podcast. I'm excited that you are both here. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Tina.
Okay.
Good to see you, Tina.
Yeah, you too. It has been, I actually meant to look up when we last spoke to each other, but it's got to be 3 or 4 years. I think you just bought out Running With Sherman, I think. So what year was that?
I don't remember. I'll tell you one thing. It was before I moved to Hawaii. So I'm coming to you now from a tropical island as opposed to a peach bottom farm.
That's definitely a difference. Although I didn't know you were in Hawaii. Whereabouts in Hawaii are you?
We are on Oahu. Yeah, I did not know that. Wow. You did not know that. Yeah, we're on Oahu on the windward side. And I just rolled in from the beach here at 9:30 in the morning.
I just went to Hawaii for the first time this year. And it had so many people saying how this it's sacred and it's magic. And I thought, yeah. Like there's magical places all over the world. Nope. I went to Maui, which I have heard is like still Oahu is up there as the top place to go. But it was, I couldn't believe how connected I felt to the land and just how sacred it felt. I really felt that in my bones. So,
when you get it, Tina, it's when you're out on a run and you're like, ooh, what's that amazing smell? And you realize, oh, that's just Hawaii. I'm just smelling the island.
That's well, and all the roosters, I don't know about Oahu, but in Maui, there's a lot of roosters roostering. What do they call it? Cockadoodle doing in the mornings.
I kind of dig it though. You go into like a shopping mall parking lot and there's wild chickens running around. Like to me, like that's life.
Oh yeah. I loved it. I'm trying to convince my husband to go out there for a year because it is, I mean, sorry, not a year. That would be a stretch. He would absolutely not do that. I'm trying to get him to go out for a month next summer, but so far unsuccessful, but I will keep working. Eric, I want to get to know you a little bit. I have had Chris on a few different times. Tell us a little bit about you, whatever you would like to share with us as we're going to dive in a bit deeper. But surface level, what would you like to share?
Sure thing. Well, Chris is sitting at sea level. I'm sitting at 7,000 feet in the Tetons of Jackson Hole. So I live in the mountains. Lived in Jackson Hole 20 years now. And back prior to moving, I helped kind of pioneer online coaching. And so I've been operated my own coaching business for the last 20 some years. I coach ultra runners, marathon runners, and also host camps and help people kind of get their running back in line. And with that, was fortunate enough to hook up with Chris for a little coaching and running adventure down in the Copper Canyon, which became Born to Run back in 2009. And wrote my own book, The Cool Impossible, and now we're teaming up again for Born to Run 2. So,
how many years have you known each other now at this point?
We first met in 2005. Okay. That kind of spearheaded our foray down into the Copper Canyon that following year.
Yeah, cool. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. So I'd love to hear, you said about kind of pioneering, I can't remember the word to use exactly, with pioneering coaching essentially, but when you first started mentioning to people about how individuals should have coaches or maybe recreational runners should consider coaches, even if they're not trying to win a marathon, what was that met with when you first started talking about the importance of coaches?
Yeah. So the first part was the challenge to put out the idea that coaching can be done online and that run coaching or any coaching has to take place in person. And I've had athletes here in Jackson that I coached and I never met. Mm-hmm. And so this is a very accepted way of coaching and the way to coach. And back in the late 90s when, you know, websites and this kind of the online platform was just coming out, that was the hurdle. It was, okay, hey, yes, this is the proper way to coach and a very, very efficient way to coach that then therefore allows anybody to be able to do it. It's an affordable way. And again, it lets that recreational age grouper type of athlete come in and who I feel really benefits just as much, if not more than an elite or professional athlete.
So what would be your pitch for someone who's still holding on to the, well, I'm just kind of fumbling around, figuring it out on my own. I'm a recreational runner who doesn't need a coach.
Well, just that is that if you're, I take the guesswork out of it. So you can just focus on having fun and doing the day-to-day journey that I think is so important for someone who's training for a race or just trying to find the joy in running, you know? So it's, again, it's, I take all the guesswork out of it and you can just focus on the part that you really like.
Yes. I'm always singing the praises of coaches, especially, yeah, I think the online way to go is, I mean, of course it would be great if we could all have a coach who lived across the street from us who could, you know, meet every day, but it's just not the way things work for most people in our world. And, I'm really glad that you've been one of the pioneers in making that change, because it's an important one and one that is much needed for many people. Okay, so I asked you both about how you met in 2005. You took this trip together the next year. And Chris, in 2009, you wrote Born to Run. Tell us about the relationship at that point, how... For the listeners who, well, as it has been, what, 12 years, 13 years since Born to Run came out, what was the role, what was Eric's role in your journey at that point and in writing the book, in case they have kind of lost their memory around that?
Well, really simply, no Eric, no Born to Run. I would not be running today. And what's interesting is not only would there have been no Born to Run, without Eric's expertise in online coaching, there would have been no Born to Run too, because all the coaching he did for me was virtual. We happened to meet in Denver because I've been assigned to write an article about him for Men's Journal. And it wasn't about running. It was about all of his other training he was doing with athletes. And I showed up and I think we were going to do some running drills up a hill. I'm like, well, you know, I haven't really run. I've been injured. My Achilles this, my plantar's that, blah, blah, blah. You know, the usual laundry list of runner complaints. I hadn't run a step in like 2 or 3 years at that point. And he started asking me questions about that. Like, well, why? What's the problem? Why can't you run? And I explained why. Well, this, I'm 240 pounds. I'm 6'4". Doctors say this, orthotics that. And he's like, that's just all, it's all nonsense, man. It's all noise. Mm-hmm. You can blow all that away. And I was the skeptic who thought, well, you know, coaches are basically just glorified babysitters. You know, like if you want to run, you run, you know, you're just hiring a nanny. And I didn't understand that if you wanted to learn like karate, you wouldn't go, okay, I'm just going to do it, have the fun stuff, do it myself. You know, if I want to learn how to dance ballet or swim, I'm not going to jump in the water. For, I'll just thrash around and figure it out. But that's what most people do with running. And that was my perspective. And Eric's like, no, man, running is a fine art. It's a biomechanical skill. You can either learn it or you can suffer from not learning it. And that was it. That was our only meeting. And then off I go back to Pennsylvania, back he goes to Wyoming, and then he began to coach me remotely. And what was so instrumental in the writing of Born to Run was not only did he prepare me in less than a year to go from zero up to a 50-mile race, but looking back, the training logs that he would insist that I keep on a daily basis were hugely influential in the writing of the book, because I was able to see my own evolution. Mm-hmm. And I think it is so key, because so often when we read people's memoirs about running or their running adventure, it comes from the perspective of like, you got it all figured out, you know, like it's basically telling like how they are now, how tough they are and what they've overcome. Mine was from the very beginning, like that very first run of like, I don't think this is going to work. You know, I'm not sure about this guy. And so that ability that Eric had to do two things. Number one, to gradually convince a skeptic to sign on to the program and follow it. But secondly, how to translate movement into language. That was key. And essentially that's jumping ahead in the story. That's what led to Born to Run 2 was It's very difficult to come up with instructions for people to follow that's going to make sense. And you know, they're going to do it in a foolproof way. And because Eric is now an expert in online coaching, he's figured out ways to teach running form in a way that he can write a few words and you get it and you won't screw it up.
Mm. Eric, tell us about your journey to get to, first we'll start with that moment that Chris just shared for us, described for us, when I got to imagine that you weren't, you were one of, you know, there weren't many of you kind of saying this to some, I would imagine most people that came across Chris would have said, well, I'm not even going to bother trying to change his mind. He's got it set. So tell us about your journey to reach that point to where you had the confidence to say this to him and follow through with it.
Well, I think it really comes from experience in seeing that in other people, you know, and I often see it with athletes who come to me as they think they have this special, unique, one of a kind injury or dysfunction that only they have. And no, it's the body's meant to move a certain way. So everybody can move that one way. And so regardless of who the person is, if you do certain things, it's going to work. And, you know, I've been an athlete all my life. And there was a moment in time back in the mid 90s when I made that conscious choice to become a coach. And everything I did 24/7 poured myself into learning biomechanics and really blending my own experience, I think my own talent for understanding an athlete and the science behind all that and meshing that all together. And I think that if I have a talent in coaching, it's blending those three in a way that resonates with any type of athlete. And I think that's what I pride myself in, is that I've worked with, you know, professional athletes and just beginners. And I really have an innate feel of what that person individually needs for their personality, not necessarily, again, specific to any one thing.
I think that's so
important. If I can interrupt, I got to tell a little story about how Eric made his sister cry. So it really speaks to what he's talking about, that ability to understand what a runner needs or a person needs or will benefit from. So we were on this tour together. We did like 26 events across the country. We were everywhere from Harlem to Boston to Birmingham. And every place we went to, people who thought they had a special, special problem would come up to Eric. And people like Rich Rawl, like our friend Zach Friedley, who is an adaptive athlete with a blade, a bunch of people in Berkeley Park who've been suffering from chronic injuries in Colorado. And the moment that really resonated for me was we were in Colorado and we're actually staying with Eric's sister, Janice. And she knows Eric as her brother, you know, and the star athlete from when they were in school. And we were at this stadium and Zach Friedley was there, who's struggling with his running. He's trying to go from being a new runner to an ultra athlete with a blade, you know, with a prosthetic leg. And he was describing his struggles and the intense quiet with which Eric listened to him, absorbing and empathizing. And then Eric began to demonstrate some drills. And this moment, you saw Zach's body language changed. Like you felt like the hope. It's like his shoulders came back, like his head came up. Like you literally saw his chin rise. And I was standing next to Janice, and she's like, "This is making me cry." She was so proud of the way, Eric, you figured out what this very particular case needed, and then the response, you know, like, anyway, so that was it. I think that's Eric's superpower, is he does dial in very intently on what each person is struggling with and figures out a path forward.
What is it about, I would love to hear both of you, the answer here in terms of what is it about that individual human, obviously something running for some reason means something to them. And I understand this from when, just before Eric, I don't know what you do and don't know, Chris, I know you know this at this point. I quit running. I was an elite athlete, quit running. I just was so broken physically, mentally, quit the sport. And now I've, as I mentioned to you before we started recording, I've come back in with this goal of joy. And I'm very much there. But during that point, I was so broken. Our relationship was so fractured. And I think that's the case with so many runners, be it through an injury or something keeps coming up, or they never quite get to where they feel their body feels efficient. What is it about being in that moment when you listen to them, Eric, and you really try and figure out what exactly running means to them and what they need in that moment that is so powerful, that can change your life. I mean, you must have many examples like what Chris just shared right there, but I would love for you, Eric, to share why that means so much to runners. And then Chris afterwards can maybe give some more reflections on that too.
Yeah, I think for me, it's having the ability to have empathy to what they're going through. Mm. And I mean that really from an experiential standpoint, is that endurance running completely changed my life. Mm-hmm. And I was not a very good endurance athlete when I started endurance. I was a very, very good athlete growing up. I played football in college. You know, I was very fast, you know, from a fast twitch athlete standpoint. And when I moved to Colorado, I learned about the Tarahumara Indians. And I said, this is for me. This is what I want to do. And so when I started to endurance train, I got into triathlons, and it was hard for me. Mm. And everything up until that point from an activity standpoint was completely easy for me. I was just naturally gifted from that side of things. And so when I decided to become an endurance runner, I was not very good. I can take that experience and empathize really with most anybody out there from my own experience. Even though now I've built myself up to be a pretty strong mountain runner, I consider myself a good mountain runner. It's not something that I was naturally good at, but that's what I was used to being, was naturally good. And I had to go through that process, which then I think allows me to be that good listener as a coach.
Mm, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, Chris, what do you think it means to have for a runner to have someone like Eric understand them in the way he does?
I think it's so rare, because what has, I think, ruined running for almost everybody, and I think you're a perfect example, Tina, is that we've been locked in to being money-making machines for the running industry. So much of running is based on making money off of your back. It's by selling you shoes and selling you race bibs. And that's all you ever hear about constantly. New shoes, better shoes, faster shoes. What race? Qualify for this race? Which race? These are money-making things, which I think just suck all the joy out of running. And we're brainwashed into believing that running equals performance, running equals speed, running equals toughness. The books that I despise, and the people that I am so unhappy with in the running industry, the ones that are constantly preaching this toughness and no pain, no gain. You got to gut through it, get to the finish line if you got to crawl. I'm like, fuck that. You know, that's not what running is. And I believe, Tina, that's the reason why Born to Run resonated with so many people, is because nobody at that race was there to win. Everybody was there for the adventure. Because one of the big mysteries to me for a very long time was like, what the hell is Scott Jorth doing on this bus? Why is this guy here? This is the top most famous ultramarathoner in the world who's doing stuff nobody else could do. Why the heck is he in his backyard race in the ass end of the wilderness? And now it makes perfect sense, because the reason why Scott wins is Scott is about the wacky adventure. Hey, man, can I do Western States in Badwater? Who knows? I'll try it. Can I do Spartan? No one had heard about the Spartathlon. Yeah, Spartathlon. No one had heard of that race. Scott showed up for the adventure. Jen and Billy, you know, they're trying to squeeze a race in between margaritas. Barefoot Ted, you know, he's trying to see if he can run a race while never stopping talking the entire 50 miles. They had their own unique challenges there. So I think that's the reason why the book resonated. People are like, oh, this is not a book about going fast or pain. This is a story about having fun and like connecting with people, which was Caballo's goal from the beginning. You know, people ran hard. Like, that race was hard and people went at it, but the goal was fun. So I think when people meet Eric in a very quiet way, he doesn't use these words like, dude, forget about going fast. He starts, I'll tell you, the first thing he asked me was, what's my dream as a runner? And my dream was, dude, I just want to be able to go out the door and run in any direction whenever I want, as far as I feel like it. And he's like, that's a good goal. And that's why I feel like we connected, because it's now been 15 years and he gave me that great gift, which in the end leads to greater performance. You know, if you're having more fun, you're going to run more, you're going to run more, you're going to get faster, you get faster, you enjoy it more. It's an upward cycle.
Thank you to Allbirds for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. Now, you have heard me talking about Allbirds, how they want to just make better choices, do things that have been done in the past in a better way. They are a carbon neutral company, and they are funding high impact carbon projects in addition to natural materials to make that a reality. But before they do that, they get the footprint of each item that they make so that they have the whatever kilogram of carbon per item. And then they are able to reduce that to make it carbon neutral. Now, I've been talking about the carbon footprint, how we need to start talking about this, and how we need clothing brands to really own their number. And that's where they're going to be able to make a difference by cutting that down. But today I want to talk to you about one specific thing. I've talked about Allbirds as a whole. You've probably seen that I've been doing lots of Allbirds events lately. And I want to say, if you have not been to one of the Allbirds events and I'm coming to a place near you, these are so inclusive and empowering and supportive. I am absolutely loving the diversity and the richness of the stories and the people that are coming to these events. Every event I do with Allbirds, everyone walks away feeling empowered and strong and just connected. These are beautiful events. So if you have the opportunity, if you are going to be in Chicago on October 7th, come to the Allbirds event on that evening. You can find out more in my social media. And if you are in San Francisco, there's also an event on the 13th I would love for you to attend. And finally, if you're going to be at the New York Marathon, there is going to be an event on the 4th of November. So I would love to see you there. Find out more in the newsletter. But anyway, I want to talk to you today about the Women's Performance Sports Bra. This bra I wore at the Venice Beach event a few weeks ago. Honestly, one of the best bras I've worn in my entire life. It was so supportive, so comfortable. I wore it from 8 a.m. all the way through to 10 p.m. Didn't change, didn't shower, didn't smell. And it was so comfortable, very supportive. And I just encourage you to go check it out. You can check out the Women's Performance Sports Bra by going to allbirds.com. It's got this open back to allow maximum airflow. It's got removable cups, but not the cups that keep folding into themselves. Let me just add that. And it's high support enough to be able to handle running. So go check it out at allbirds.com, the Women's Performance Sports Bra. Absolutely. And I mentioned to you both at the beginning before we recorded that that's very much the path I've been following. And it's so funny to me as well now this morning my mom said to me, "So do you think you'll do another marathon for yourself?" And I said, "I did. I ran on Sunday." And she said, "Well, no, you know what I mean." And I said, "No, I have no interest in going." I think I said, to be honest, I said, "I have no interest going into that hellhole," which is maybe a bit extreme. But like you said, Chris, I have no problem pushing myself. I am quite happy to challenge myself, to try something new. I have a ultra in mind for next year that is a very difficult one that I think I want to do, but it is the like intensity that comes with it that I have absolutely no desire to go do, of like squeezing every last drop to beat other people or to you know, like I've never worn a carbon plated shoe. I never intend to wear a carbon plated shoe because for me that just loses a lot of the pureness of it. So you mentioned, Chris, about the media and money and selling us things. How did we get to this point where our sport, this activity that is so natural, has just become almost all about, yeah, money and spending and, as we said, races, competing?
There's a great quote, and I'm a little bit foggy on it right now, but it basically comes along the lines of like, anything that starts as a radical movement will eventually become a cult or a corporation, you know? And so what began as a radical movement back in the 70s, this idea of like, wow, recreational running, like we can just go out the door and run. This is fantastic. And then, oh, hey, Manders, we'll either turn it into a religion or a racket. And so it became a racket. It became an opportunity. If a lot of people are doing something, somebody will scheme a way to cash in on it. And so, you know, races which began, you know, the first New York City Marathon were like 9 jabonis running loops around Central Park. I'm sure it was free. The first cost was probably some crappy homemade t-shirt. But then there was big money to be made. And what unfortunately happens is that it's very easy for marketing to tap into our insecurities about who we are. And that's really, unfortunately, what running's all about. It's about tapping into your insecurities, about your body image, your weight, your appearance, your speed, your toughness. Think about it. Everything you see about running, it is all zeroed in on what's wrong with you and how you can fix it by running, which drives me insane. And it honestly is the motivation for, this is not my own market, but for Born to Run too. It's like Eric and I are looking at this thinking, man, we thought this was going to change 15 years ago. Like I thought when Born to Run came out, this is the dawn of a new era. You don't need the shoes. You don't need the races. You can show up with a group of friends. And instead it's gone the other way. Bigger shoes, more races, more demands, and less diversity. So the two goals we had was, hey man, let's just show all the faces in the sport and let's show how much fun it can be.
Eric, I want to hear your answer in just a second, but Chris first. So it did change a little bit, at least in my opinion, following Born to Run, but that is that almost more painful that it was almost like a trend that came and went. Like the book came out, you had this like kind of minimalist movement and then it just went away. Like was that almost more painful than it not changing at all?
It's kind of funny because when I wrote the book, I had no idea if anyone was going to read it. You know, there was almost no shelf for running books back when Born to Run came out. There was a couple, two or three of the usual like training guides, the same old like how not to chafe kind of information. And then there was the blockbuster Ultra Marathon Man, which was terrific and really paved the way for the rest of us. Otherwise, there was nothing else out there. So I assumed that my book was going to sort of come and go and be ignored. I definitely did not think that the barefoot chapter was going to land, you know, because I was kind of on the fence about whether to even include it. You know, like this chapter about shoes, I don't know, it's a little dry, it's a little academic, maybe I should cut it out. And so it did surprise me when that became the real kind of tolling church bell. But so to answer your question, what happened was at first I had no thoughts. No one's going to read it. And then suddenly there was this movement. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, all right, this can't last. You know, at some point, Nike's going to have to turn the howitzers and the artillery on us and blow it away. But they didn't really have to. I think people just became infatuated with the next trend. So I think maybe my lost hope was that I really had hoped that people would get the sense that running could be so fun and pressure-free. And that hasn't really happened.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that. Eric, what would you say there in response to either that or just about the commercialization of our sport?
I think I'll just talk from my own experience and my athletes. As I and it kind of goes back to one of the earlier questions about how I tend to see racing as a vehicle to. A tangible vehicle to find out about yourself and to maybe realize that life is just a game and that we put maybe too much pressure on outcomes. And that's where I coined my book, The Cool Impossible. The Cool Impossible is all the little cool things that happen along the way of striving towards a goal. And a goal is not important because once you cross that finish line, you're an ex winner, right? You're an ex champion. You're ex finisher. You're doing that while you're out there doing that. And so I think to answer your question, you know, getting back to the root reason why we want to get up at 5 a.m. and go for a run, And it's because you are really wanting to do it. And, I look back when I was getting into the sport in Colorado and there was no social media, there was no internet, and there was no watches. And we would all show up for Saturday and we'd ride our bike to the trailhead. We'd go run the Colorado Trail and ride our bike home and get together and create a different adventure the next weekend. My first ultra, I rode my bike 20 miles to run and 20 miles back just because it was just fun. So I think even though that medal and the t-shirt and the plaque, all that is sometimes the goal, it's ultimately just a vehicle to maybe create something bigger with your life.
So true. And again, going back to my story of when I left the sport, that was when I realized something was really broken within me. When I would finish one race, I'd cross the line and I'd be like, okay, well, my next race is in July. I can't wait to cross that finish line. And that was in January. And I'd be like, something is very wrong here. If I'm like excited for 6 months down the road and not excited for the race, but excited to cross the finish line again. Like, right. There's something wrong here.
and two things with that real quickly. One, I see it a lot where athletes getting into ultra running and in marathoning or any racing where they're kind of new to it and they actually do really well that first race. Mm-hmm. And now they've gone from the beginner's mindset to having all these expectations. And I see those expectations like kill everything. They start training more. Hey, if I did that well that first time, more. Mm-hmm. And then they can't replicate that same good feeling again and that accomplished feeling. So I think having expectations creep in can be a real crutch. And with that, I think we were talking about going into race and having the joy of racing. And I always go back to Chris. Here's a guy who went down the Copper Canyon who knew he was going to come in last, didn't know if he was going to finish it. And he did, and he changed millions of people's lives. Yeah. And it was nothing about going to win. Or it was just one step in front of the other and he put himself out there. And that to me is what it's all about. You don't know what the outcome can be until you actually do it. And I think so many people want to know what that outcome is going to be beforehand, which is impossible.
Yes, so true. Thank you for explaining that. So I have to ask in that moment, like when we talked earlier about the book coming out and the wild success and the barefoot piece being the bit that people grabbed onto. And by the way, can I just add, my husband is still running. He doesn't do his full run barefoot. We live in the suburbs where it's not possible, but he runs barefoot, I think 3 or 4 times a week for like 10 to 15 minutes. Our neighbors, as you can imagine, love to be like, what is that guy doing? But he still does it diligently every week. And so I know his feet are very like tough at this point. Nice. I know there's one person who's kept it up. So, but yes, I would love to hear when this success was taking off, when the barefoot movement was coming along, like what were your thoughts, Eric? Were you excited? Were you thinking the same thing that this is can't keep going? Or yeah, share a bit with us what was going through your mind there.
Well, what was interesting, shortly after Born to Run came out, I was asked to be part of a startup shoe company. So
they had done it because of that.
They contacted me because of my involvement with Born to Run. And this was a venture capitalist who unfortunately had no experience in the shoe industry, which is a whole different, but anyway, so I dove into this startup shoe company and I immediately, and the reason why I left the project of just what goes on behind the scenes to make a shoe company work. And at that point, I was also, we were working with designers who were working with Hoka. And I'm like, oh man. So the completely opposite is coming out. And this was still in kind of the Vibram Five Finger craze. I'm like, what are they doing? And, you know, I'm no longer with a shoe company, and you know what Hoka is doing right now, right? So to me, I was really intimately involved with kind of seeing how this all kind of shakes out for different reasons and how it probably wouldn't work.
Yeah. Did you have something to add, Chris?
Oh, only in the sense of like, I still can't get my head around what people find so appealing about cushioned shoes. I don't get it, because to me, the sensual joy of your feet are freeing them. Like, what's the first thing everybody does when they get home? Take off their shoes, you know?
And my socks.
And your socks. Get those feet. So when I hear anybody talk about Hokas and carbon fiber, I'm like, wait, I really love the fact that my foot can move inside of a shoe. So I don't even know why this is even a debate anymore, but maybe, you know, Eric has lured me way too over to the funky side. But I like shoes. I have a lot of different pairs of shoes. I got like 15 different pairs of shoes outside because I like the sensual joy of a variety. Like, I don't want to eat the same oatmeal every day. I don't want to wear the same shoes every day. But the fact is, I want to feel my toes spread and my feet move. So that's why I'm still kind of shaking my head. Like, what do you guys like about this cushion? I don't get it.
And here's the deal is that within the industry, for those companies to remain successful and meet their quarter, they have to sell out through all their shoe lines. Mm-hmm. They can't rely just on one or two. So they can't have a message barefoot running or minimal running is the right way to go, because they need to sell those five other shoes for them to be a successful company. Mm-hmm. And so they can't sabotage themselves, their own self. And they can't have a message to do that. Yeah. And so that becomes the problem, is that it just goes against what they need to do as a company.
Mm. Yeah. We've definitely got ourselves in a dangerous place, just as a culture. And, as I said, I've never worn a carbon plated shoe. I don't have the high cushion shoes, but it's hard to stay away from it.
Real quickly too, is that the driving factor with any shoe that comes out every spring is what can be told about that shoe that's new for the PR companies to tell a story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what drives it.
Yeah.
And they need something to talk about, because it's got to be something new that's old, that's not something they talked about last year. Yeah. When you're dealing with a minimal shoe, there's not much to talk about.
That's so true.
Okay. And so it's these PR companies and the marketing team within the company thinks they need to keep having the new, latest, and greatest thing to talk about that's driving the design team. And so the marketing tends to rise above the cream within the designer team.
Well, and never mind the environmental effects of creating all these shoes and just throwing them in a landfill. Yeah, that's more where I've been hit in the past, is just the wastefulness, the lesser quality of things lasting. That's where I've really struggled, just knowing they're going into a landfill for hundreds of years. But yeah, our bodies too. Are you going to say something, Chris?
I was going to say, I think we need to change the tone of this conversation, because it's kind of complainy, and that's my go-to. I tend to be complainy and whiny, and I feel like, whoa, I start to hear myself like, rah, 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 running shoes are bad. Like, you know what? Let's get back to that joy. Hey, so Tina, you were mentioned early on before we began that you have is it a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old in the house?
Yeah.
And you don't want to do some of the exercises that Eric recommends in Born to Run 2 because you got an arm full of babies around.
Oh, no, don't. You're going to trick me here, aren't you? I'm going to commit to something.
No commitment. Eric knows I am anti-commitment, because early on in an early draft of the book, he had like 15 exercises, and I'm like, dude, there's no way I'm doing 15 exercises. You should dial this back to 3, my man. But let me point out the section on movement snacks.
Yes, I saw this.
We created by, do you know Julie Angel? I feel like I connected you with her. Did I not?
No.
Connect you with Julie Angel? I need to connect you with Julie Angel for a lot of reasons. She is a parkour expert who now really specializes in taking parkour into more accessible natural movement for the people. Mm-hmm. And she created movement snacks for us for this book. But I bet you, you know, if you do bear crawls and these ninja jumps with your kids, they're going to go berserkers. And what this basically is this is sort of flexibility and full range of motion exercises in disguise as like playful activities.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can actually say that that is true. My husband is very good at doing his, prep exercises before he runs, and they love to go do leg swings with him and all the things, all the stretches and dynamic movements he does. And when I have done strength training stuff, including bear crawls, I can't remember what the other thing you said was, but ninja, what did you say? Ninja something?
Ninja jumps.
Ninja
pogos.
Jumps. Yeah, they do love doing all that. I mean, although they can't usually handle three sets of something, they want to do it once and then they're like, and next one. And I'm like, no, we got two more sets.
I agree with them, by the way. Anything that I can count, I don't want to do.
That's a fair point. But yes, I did see that section and it's, I just need to, I don't know. I don't know what my problem is right now. I don't know if I just burn myself out on I don't know. I really don't have an excuse, but I know I need to do something. I know I'm in my mid 30s now, and I can only get away with this for so long before my body's going to say, nope.
I don't know, Tina. I don't like what I'm hearing from you. This sense of like, I ought to, I need to, I don't want to. I feel like
this is the point of the book, right? I'm literally like giving you perfect client.
Yeah, I really do honestly feel that it is an unfortunate mindset. And I realize you've come out of something very troubling and scarring from the performance aspect, which I think is such an unnatural thing we ask humans to do, to put themselves in the extreme physical distress, which is what marathon racing is. And now I really hope that you can just remove all that sense of gotta, shoulda, why don't I? I feel bad that I'm not. I need to do two more. You know, I mentioned like my wife's in the book. I mentioned I think my wife's genius innovation, her little free library run, you know, where she loads her backpack full of discarded books and then she just runs around to little free libraries. What I love about it is it's kind of an asymmetrical loop because, you know, one free library is a quarter mile away, the other one's a mile away, the other one's 2 miles away. So you're on a quarter mile stop and a half mile and stop. And then your backpack is getting progressively lighter as you're offloading books and you have little built-in rest stations. And there's all the gratitude, you know, the sense of, hey, you know what? I just did something good for the community, you know? So I don't know. I just hope you find that kind of jubilation and gratification in your workouts.
Thank you to Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode of the Running for Real podcast. Now, you've heard me talking about Athletic Greens for years now. It allows you to say goodbye to piles of pills and countless powders. One daily serving of AG1 delivers this potent blend of 9 health products, a multivitamin, minerals, probiotics, adaptogens, and more. It's the comprehensive foundational nutrition you need with the convenience for your life demands. Now, that applies to me in a way I cannot even describe. With 2 young kids, I know I should be getting 27 different fruits and vegetables in a day, but honestly, some days I'm lucky if I can get 1 or 2 at dinner. And it is difficult for me to take care of myself with just this hectic life that I live. So while I want to make these green juices every morning, with a juicer machine with the kale and the ginger and the lemon and all those other things, I just don't have the time for it. I can barely get to stuff something down my throat to eat. And I love that I can wake up before the girls wake up, drink down my 1 scoop of Athletic Greens with ice cold water, drink it down, know that I've got 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients to start my day, so that even if that day ends up being hectic and running around all over the place, I know I've got that in. It tastes good. It's almost a slight pineapple-y taste. I love drinking it before I run. I drink it and go immediately out the door. It's going to help with your gut health. It's going to support your immunity. It's going to boost your energy and help with recovery. What more can you ask for with one scoop? So you can go to athleticgreens.com/Tina. You will get 5 free travel packs and a 1-year free supply of vitamin D3 and K2. Now, as we head into the winter months, that is when we need that vitamin D, and it works well with the K3 as well to absorb better. We need those to protect us from all the nasty sicknesses that are coming around. So be sure to go to athleticgreens.com/Tina to go check out my special offer and stop stressing about not getting those fruits and vegetables in. This is going to take care of you. Okay, so 2 things. One, I was going to say to you about that, about the little library run. I actually do that myself with I use a stroller and push my 2-year-old, but I do the same thing. I'll like load it up with books that are too young for her, run to all the little libraries and drop off books. Occasionally pick one up, but mostly just drop off books. And so I feel her there. I do the same thing. And then the second part is, I think I'll just, you know, turn this into a little bit of me for a second. I think part of my problem, you did mention, like, it's my past that I can't, it's almost like I'm a rebellious teenager. Like, that was what my past was. And so now I'm like, no, I'm going to like just run and that's it. So I'm in like a rebellious teenager stage. However, the hardest part for me is I'm recognizing that I'm having a desire to do other things. Like, I just met a load of backpackers and hikers and ice climbers and all these really amazing people in the outdoor space. And they all said, oh, you should come with me. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. But it's the implementation, almost removing the habit of running, or for these, you know, fun, many of these things you mentioned in the book, which are, yeah, meant to be fun and meant to be bring joy. I literally cannot remove the physical act of running to prioritize, not even prioritize that, to do that instead or as well as, or as well as. I just, I don't know if it's like a habit or a compulsion or what, but I just can't seem to remove the running, but I also feel like I'm kind of rebelling against everything. So maybe this is exactly what I do need. Although I just did exactly what you said not to do, which is say need.
I don't know, Eric is getting a very thoughtful look at
Yeah, he's listening now. I've made myself like misexperiment here.
I would say look for that little thing that's still in there that attaches yourself to being the runner you were before. If you feel the need to rebel, there's still something there that's making you rebel in the identity of who you were as a runner before. Mm-hmm. And if you can figure out that need to rebel will go away.
But is that the compulsion I mentioned about maybe I need to just completely step back or run twice a week and go rock climbing twice a week or something else? Maybe I sense that might be the step. And I've mentioned this a few times on this podcast that I suspect I get this urge to not train, run. So maybe it is just pulling away.
I think typically when we feel the need to rebel, it's when we feel like we've lost control of our own ability to make a decision. Mm. So strip it down and create the I want to rather than I need to. Mm-hmm. Going back to that word need. So do you want to go for a run that's 10 minutes or do you feel like you need to go for 40?
Mm-hmm. I think that's
And make that conscious decision. Say, okay, yeah, I want to go for a 10-minute run today, or no, I don't. Uh-huh. And that's okay too. Give yourself permission to say no.
Yeah.
And bring the decision back to you, because as soon as we feel like we can't make our own decisions, that's when we rebel.
I think you're right.
Oh my God. I mean, is this like being with the Dalai Orton? I mean, dude, honestly, you really amaze me at your wisdom, man. That is,
you know,
I'm sitting back there, so God damn, that's smart.
Yeah, so intuitive. And it's crazy because you even saying that, it isn't 10 minutes versus 40 minutes. For me, it's like always an hour. Like an hour has always been like what I've considered worth it which is just ridiculous to say. But I think that's part of it, is that I've got to the point where if I'm going to run, I'm going to go for an hour. And I ran for 40 minutes this morning, but I was proud of making that step. But in general...
But give your permission that it's, you're just going because you want to, not because you need to. Uh-huh. And I think that's a huge distinction.
Yeah.
You know, Billy Barnett, he'd be a really interesting guy for you to talk to sometime, because Billy Barnett is the master of making it fun. And his performance is insane. So here in Hawaii, he's become kind of legendary. They call him the Ghost Runner, because Billy's now mid-30s, like 36, I think. Anyway, he'll rock up at a race at the last second. He'll sign in like as Daffy Duck or something, as under an alias. He'll podium, but then he'll leave. And I think, dude, why don't you like hang around and like congratulate the other winners? He's like, no, man, no more podiums for me, man. I'm like, I'm not above anybody else. I'm there to run. And then I just go to the Waffle House. So he runs for the sheer joy of it. And then he's gone. He's on to the next thing in his life. But what's most interesting is he and his wife had their first baby, Cosmo. And about 7 months, and Billy was a lot of the time was the primary caregiver during the day. And so he's taking care of Cosmo. And so his runs were dictated by whatever Cosmo was going to put up with. So if Cosmo was not rocking the jog stroller that day, then it's like, all right, so we're doing a mile today. And then it's back to play on the floor. So then Billy shows up at the Honolulu Marathon, finishes friggin' third and PRs. This is 7 months after being a primary caregiver for a newborn. And I'm like, and then his wife goes out in the Hurt 100 and also podiums with her PR. And I said, what's the secret? And they're like, I guess we just had a fun year. And it really translated into performance. So, you know, he'd be an interesting guy to talk to. I mean, he's made it his life mission to never do it if it's not a smile.
Yeah, I got some. This is what I needed to hear. Although I keep saying the word need. This is an important conversation, one that I have been wrestling with internally. So it's good to actually talk it through.
Let it go, girl. Let it go.
I know. What does that mean? And I'll work through what that means. I do want to continue on this theme, though, because one thing you wrote in one of the early parts of the book was about people don't just, maybe it was about Born to Run or just the approach in general. People didn't just want to run. They wanted to like running, which sounds crazy to say, like, well, of course. But why is it, do you think is it exactly what I just mentioned right there? Why have we got to this point where that isn't the obvious answer to say people want to like running?
I really think it's that we have so many dark shadows over our self-esteem. And we're told that running is a way to mollify some of those doubts we have about ourselves. You're not tough enough. You're not working hard enough. You're not skinny enough. You're not fast enough. And so running becomes associated really with fear and self-doubt, as opposed to what it used to be, which was like, yeah, fun, tearing it up. I mean, you go to any playground, there's not a whole lot of fear and self-doubt on the playground.
Oh, yeah.
Kids aren't checking their watches to see, hey, what are the other kid on Strava doing this playground the day before? Kids are just tearing around. And the other thing too, when you look at kids running, is it's all not like syncopated and uniform. Some kids don't show up at the playground and go, hey, let's all line up and do 75 laps at this playground. You know, they run fast, they run slow, they climb the monkey bars, they take a rest in the shade, they stop to talk. That sense of like there is no right or wrong, which is what play is. That's what I think people are hoping for from the running. And so here's one simple remedy, Tina, which is that, you know, if you run in a group, it's very hard to run in a group and not have fun. It's very, very, unless it becomes a race. But as long as you're running in a group and you're complaining about your parents, which is the best way to run, you know, get a group of people together, someone say something about your dad, and then everyone starts complaining about their parents. And then next thing you know, 8 miles have gone by and you all feel great. And the group never turns into a race because every person's waiting for their chance to complain. But you finish the run and you feel fantastic. So there's a simple remedy right there. If we make running more communal and less competitive, we're already getting off on the right foot.
Absolutely. Eric, what would you add?
This is a fascinating conversation. I I think it's, there's no message out there that running a marathon or running an ultra marathon or competition is fun and can be enjoyable. And I'll use myself as an example. When I first did triathlon, I remember finishing my first triathlon and thinking to myself, how did it go? And speaking of podium, I think I placed in my age group, and I was disappointed because I didn't have to crawl across the finish line, because that's what I thought triathlon was about, is that it was this enduring, the worst day of, and the last thing you could do is just pull yourself across the finish line. And I was disappointed because I didn't have that experience. And that taught me a lesson, is like, no, this competition can be fun. I'm a coach. I coach people to race. And if you do it well and do it right, it can be fun and it can be done appropriately and it doesn't have to be torture, but there's not that message out there.
Yes, so true. And I mentioned to you both before about running, New York last week as a guide, and that's pretty much all I've done. I've done three marathons this year. All have been guiding. One was in Maui. That was why I was there.
All right.
Beautiful marathon. Definitely recommend. And I just love it. The fact that I can do this for someone else. I don't have to, as you said, Eric, crawl across the finish line. I get more joy out of it than I did during the experience of when I'm running for myself, just because you get to see it differently and know that you're supporting someone, helping the community. You get to engage with more people along the way. Like, it really is something so special. And I get a lot of people say to me, like, wow, that's amazing. I don't know if I could do that. And I'm like, you could. Like, this really is the better way of doing it. And I wasn't that sore the next day because my body wasn't pushed to the max. So I'm really glad we're talking about this, because I think there is so much more of this conversation that needs to happen. And it's just not talked about enough. So let's go over for the listeners. Born to Run was very storytelling. It was all, did you have any pictures in there?
No.
Did you have been? No. Okay. There was no pictures. This is very practical. This is very colorful, full of pictures, full of stories and action items and everything in between. So tell us a little bit about, well, firstly, I want to know, why did it take, 12, 13 years for this to come out? Answer that first.
Yeah, I think the easiest explanation is that I wasn't sure this stuff really worked. You know, like, I always felt like, I'm the guy in the back of the plane, like, oh, the pilot had a heart attack. Can anybody land the plane? I'm like, all right, I can land the plane. I'm not a pilot. You know, like, I can bring it in. I don't know if I can do it twice. And so when Eric instructed me in how to run, to me, it was still very like, it's so far so good, you know? And then after 15 years went by, I'm like, holy crap. Like, this is not a blip. This is now my lifestyle. Mm. I can walk out the door, and I will actually, the second we're done this, I have my run in mind for today. I got this really cool swim run in mind. And the second we're done, I'm going to walk out the door and blaze off on this run and swim. And so what Eric gave me was the ability to dial in form in a way where now running is a lifelong recreation and not something I have to worry about. I don't think about injuries, not even on my radar anymore. What's on my radar is what's the next adventure I'm going to have. But you know, I also felt like the space monkey. Like, I'm the monkey up in the rocket. Like, hey, this ain't going to come back alive or not. And like, now 15 years later, hey, look, he's still alive.
Yeah.
Because people have been asking me for advice forever. I just kept saying, no, you don't understand. I'm not the guy. But the second thing, I think the reason why we waited until now is because I think that Eric and I were actually learning a lot ourselves, that this was a work in progress, not just the running, but I think, Eric, you'll probably agree that we sensed that there was more to running than just the movement and the activity, but the lifestyle, about how to address food and eating, which is a very explosive and problematic conversation. Tina, I feel like in the course of researching this book, I would say 3 out of every 5 women I spoke to, unprompted, would describe their eating disorders. And I would call somebody up to ask for a recipe. Next thing I know, they're telling me about an eating disorder, which strikes me that this is a much more dangerous problem than we even realize. So I think Eric and I really wanted to dial in our understanding of how to address food and nutrition, about how to address footwear, about how to address family. You know, how do you bring family into your running life? And so that's why we took our time to really make sure we knew what we were talking about.
Yes. Thank you for that. And then, so yeah, to round out here, tell us, Eric, if you want to describe like what the book involves. I've got it right here. I've really loved looking through it, and definitely going to go through in at a slower pace to take it in. But what would you like to say to the listener who is maybe tempted and wants to make a change?
Oh wow, that's loaded. I think for me as a coach, the overriding purpose of the program and the training, so to speak, part of it is to really give not only a beginning runner a place of foundation to work with a blank slate, but also that veteran runner or the dabbler, we call them, all those other runners out there who've been doing this maybe for a while, that they either feel stuck or they hit a plateau or their body just doesn't feel good. This is kind of going back to some of a base foundation where people can maybe dial into their form and see it running as a practice that can be fun, that just like with Chris's experience, allow them then to see this take hold that could catapult what they want to do with their running in a whole new direction for them. And that's kind of, for me as a coach, what I wanted to accomplish.
Yeah, definitely came across. Thank you both for sharing with us. Thank you for actually putting the time into making this book, creating this for this conversation today. Is there anywhere else you would like to send people to? I mean, I'll put this book and also the other books from both of you in the show notes, but anywhere else you want to send people to go check out any more?
Yeah, so we're pretty active on social media. Born to Run World is our handle. YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. We're pumping out videos, and we're trying. A lot of videos and a lot of content that's going to be continuing to kind of put out. That kind of golf supports Born to Run too.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tina, my niece alerted me to the fact recently that Taylor Swift references Born to Run in one of her songs, but in a negative way. So
really?
She cites it as one of the reasons why she and Jake Gyllenhaal broke up. So
why did you do that to her? You broke Taylor's heart.
That's right. And it's something I own it, and I step up and I apologize to it. So I did a little Instagram video, which you should check out. But I said, Taylor, listen, if it was anywhere in my power to stop this, I would have stepped in.
That is so funny. I guess I was going to say that's something that you could forever claim when the ways Born to Run has impacted the world. But I don't know if you want to mention that one. That might be one to keep
up. That's great. That should be the first answer to that. How's it impacted the world? It screwed up Taylor Swift's love life, number one.
I love it. Well, thank you for sharing that. Once again, shows your vulnerability. I really appreciate you both joining me. And we'll put a link for everyone to go check it out. And I'll keep you posted on my journey. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Good luck. Great. Thanks, Tina.
The Running for Real podcast and everything we do here at Running for Real would not be possible if it wasn't for the Running for Real team. While I am the person who you hear from most often and maybe the face of the brand, the rest of our team are such critical pieces of what we do. And without them, I think I'd just be running around in circles with ideas. So I want to take a moment to thank our team. To Jeremy Nessel, who's been with me since the very beginning. Kat McKay, Sally Pontarelli, Kelsey Wang, Sandy Gutierrez, Louise Murphy, Andrew Basola, Alexandria Will, and Maria Vargas. Thank you to each and every one of you for all that you give to Running for Real and our community. I appreciate you, and I'm so thankful for having you as a part of the team. Oof, you see what I mean. definitely humbling for me, definitely difficult for me at times, but a much needed conversation. And afterwards, Chris actually ended up saying with me, or did he say it in the interview? I don't think he did. I think it was afterwards. He said to me, I want to stay in touch with you and see where this goes. So he's invested at this point. We'll see. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I, as always, love talking to Chris and really enjoyed getting to know Eric. What a man. What a mind, I should say. Absolutely incredible the way he is able to pick up these tiny little things he notices about people. Kind of makes you want to like stand in front of him and say, tell me my truth. Tell me my path. At least that's how I felt. And maybe I got the answer I wasn't expecting and I'm not prepared to absorb that yet, but we'll see what happens, huh? I want to remind you that there will be links to everything we talked about today, including that book. Go get it. It is so good. Such a beautiful read. And, the first book was incredibly powerful. This one is very actionable. I am enjoying going through it now. I will admit I did not have a chance to go through it fully before the interview, but now I'm really enjoying it and I think you will too. So there'll be links to the book there. There'll be links to other things for Eric and Chris, and there will be links to our sponsors. I want to thank once again Allbirds for sponsoring this episode. You can go to allbirds.com and check out any of the items I mentioned, especially the flyers. Those are my shoes I run in. Although we were just talking about shoes, weren't we? So maybe I should be advocating for barefoot, but I do not run barefoot. I also want to thank, so you can go to allbirds.com for that. I also want to thank Athletic Greens for keeping me healthy and strong and my immune system working, functioning correctly, especially as we go into these winter months. That free year of vitamin D is just the ideal thing to get. And you also get 5 free travel packs. So you can go to athleticgreens.com/Tina for that. And also go check out our Patreon. You got those special together runs. You've got some bonus Zoom chats. You've got extra blog posts. But if nothing else, if you don't have time for those things, it can simply be a way you can support me and allow me to continue what I am doing. So you can go to the show notes at runningforreal.com/episode325. Thank you so much for joining and listening today. I will see you on Monday for a together run. And thank you for being a part of this today. Thank you.